Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Welcome back. So this episode is a little bit different. Instead of diving into a single topic, we're going to take a look back. So each year, I do like to look back and see which posts resonated the most, not because popularity is a measure of quality, but it does tell me what people in the field are wrestling with, what caught people's interest, what's sparking conversation, and maybe what's keeping you up at night. Alternatively, it could just be showing me what the social media algorithms are pushing, but let's go with human interest here. So today we're doing an in case you missed it, recap of 2025. These are the top 10 posts, starting from number 10 and working our way up to the most read piece of the year. And along the way, we're going to talk about what these topics say about maybe where the field is headed, because the patterns this year were kind of clear about that. And remember, a link to all of these blog posts is in the final written blog of the year. Many were actually from before I had an audio blog, so you might not have caught up with them. So let's get started. Coming in at number 10 is a post born from sheer frustration called Kill the Wallet. In it, I asked whether the wallet metaphor is still useful in digital identity or whether it's time to retire it with honors. I mean, I think we've stretched that word, wallets, well past its limits. Sometimes wallet means an open standards-based holder for verifiable credentials. Sometimes it means a tightly controlled app that can only store issuer-approved items. Sometimes it means a credential locker disguised as a university application, and sometimes it means whatever Apple and Google says it means that week. So the metaphor has become a catch-all for wildly different design choices, policy assumptions, and governance models, and when a metaphor collapses that many boundaries, it's not actually clarifying anything, it's kind of obscuring things. And so that post pushed for clearer language, stronger user agency, and a little less metaphorical sleight of hand, if you might use that term. I mean, if your wallet can't support transparency, selective disclosure, and revocable permissions, maybe it didn't call itself a wallet. Okay, number 9. It was the final entry in my 4-part series on decentralization. And that was why governance decides if decentralization works. Now, this post is going to make a point that I will probably hammer on until the day I retire. Not that I have any intent of doing that anytime soon, but still. And that is that technology is very rarely the problem. Governance is the problem. We know how to build decentralized systems. We've been doing it for decades. The internet itself is decentralized. You look at DNS, you look at BGP, you look at email. All of those are decentralized technologies. But when we attempt decentralization today and it collapses into chaos, that's almost always a governance failure because you don't have shared rules, you don't have escalation paths, you don't have agreement as who decides what. Or what happens when things go wrong? I mean, without governance, decentralization becomes friction, not flexibility. And so that post argues that governance is part of the infrastructure, and digital identity teams, you, me, everybody listening, are usually the ones closest to the consequences, which also means we're the ones best positioned to guide how governance gets built. Okay, number 8 takes us straight into AI, but not into the hype cycle. This post actually came out of IETF 123 in Madrid. That was the summer 2025, where AI was, as with every conference I've been to so far, AI appears everywhere, sometimes explicitly, but sometimes kind of quietly hiding behind older technical problems. Things like delegation chaining or workload identity or API-driven workflows or bot authentication. All of these are suddenly much more important when AI agents start acting across domains. So that piece mapped where the conversations are happening in the IETF, in the W3C, in the OpenID Foundation, and in some of the emerging AI-focused community groups. And it highlighted something important, and that is that most of the consequential work often doesn't have AI in the title. So if that's where your search queries go, you're going to miss a lot. So if you're building or integrating with AI agents, these standards decisions will shape everything from authentication flows to logging how agents find each other online. And so the post essentially said, if you want to understand AI's future, watch the standards work and not the headlines. Okay, post number 7 speaks to one of the oldest problems in identity, and that is delegation. We've always needed ways for one person to act for another, like in caregiver situations, parents, assistants, coworkers, and now AI agents. But digital systems still cling to the one user, one identity, one intent model. And when real life doesn't fit that model, we get password sharing or manual overrides or role switching or support tickets or just endless workarounds. So this particular post, Acting on Behalf of Others, Why Delegation is Still Broken, explores why delegation remains so broken, even though we have partial solutions. We have OAuth descriptions, we have user-managed access from Kantara, we have token exchange, we have persona chaining. None of them address the full picture. Things like conditional restraints or transitivity or lifecycle management or clear attribution of actions. And with AI entering the picture, the stakes get higher because if delegation has been broken for humans for so long, it's certainly not ready for autonomous agents. So this post argues that delegation needs to be a first-class feature in identity, not an afterthought bolted onto systems built for a much more static world. Okay, post number 6. It's all about terminology. Specifically about why language around digital credentials is such a mess. Digital credentials that can be verified, right? We've got verifiable credentials. We've got MDocs. We've got digital credentials. We've got verifiable digital credentials. And behind each term is often a different standards body, a different architectural model, a different set of assumptions, and sometimes competing media types. That was really a really hot thing in the standards space for a little bit. So this post attempts to untangle a bit as to how we got there and why the clarity matters. Because when governments and vendors and standards groups use the same terms to mean different things, interoperability becomes kind of a polite way of saying wishful thinking. So the takeaway was pretty simple. If you're talking about credentials, please define your terms first and then resist the urge to invent a new term. Okay, halfway through the list. Number 4 was one of my earlier experiments in audio, and apparently people do good explainer about token life cycles. This post walks through why short-lived and scoped OAuth 2.0 tokens are safer, why refresh tokens must be handled with care, and why sender-constrained tokens offer important protections against replay attacks. Obviously, this was a slightly deeper dive into the technology than I often go to. It touched on trends like Depop and CAPE and real-time authorization signals. Basically, token security is not a set it and forget it. It's an ongoing risk decision that evolves in your architecture. And it was actually a whole lot of fun to record. Again, early experiment, so if you want to go check it out, go for it. Okay, we're getting to the top 3, the heavy hitters. Number 3 was the end of the global internet, which is not necessarily as apocalyptic as it sounds. That post explored the many layers of fragmentation shaping the internet today and tomorrow. It looked at regulatory divergence, supply chain splits, sovereignty rules, content controls, infrastructure gaps, and just general political tensions. The point is, it's not that the internet is collapsing, but it is becoming a bit of a patchwork. And patchworks can still work, but they do demand intentional design. So one of the big themes here was to acknowledge the reality of fragmentation without assuming it's always negative, right? Some types of fragmentation increase privacy, resilience, or innovation. Others introduce friction, inequality, or risk, right? But the point I was trying to make was you're going to have to design for that variation. You're going to have to try and build bridges where you can. And you're going to have to recognize that global interoperability is no longer a given. The internet and the web is not necessarily going to work the same way across the planet in the same ways that it may have used to function. Okay. Number 2. This post was actually written in 2024, and it gets at least 3 to 5 people looking at it every single day. Verifiable credentials and MDocs, a tale of two protocols. So kind of the fact that it won't leave the top 10 kind of tells you how relevant the debate still is. Now, it explored how MDocs grew out of government ID workflows, while verifiable credentials emerged from a web-driven extensibility model. Those roots continue to influence the privacy models, the developer experience, and the governance assumptions about the protocols themselves. And it also highlighted why the two ecosystems sometimes feel like they're racing each other, sometimes they feel like they're conflicting, and sometimes they're like accidentally solving the same problems, but from opposite directions. I think people really like this post because it made the tension between the two a lot more clear as to why is this happening? And because the landscape still depends on those particular credential formats, it continues to be fairly useful. Okay, finally, you ready? The most read post of 2025. Agentic AI and Authentication, Exploring the Unanswered Questions. Now, this one dug into the collision between authentication systems built for humans and AI agents acting autonomously. And it asked a bunch of perhaps uncomfortable but very necessary questions. How do we bound trust? How do we constrain delegation? How do we distinguish user intent from agent behavior? Where does accountability sit when AI makes decisions? And what does selective disclosure look like when the presenter isn't human? Now, this post, as is fairly typical for me, right, I don't generally offer final answers, which is just as well because we're not actually very close to having them. But I did try and surface the kind of questions that we need to be asking, and that's often where the meaningful standards work begins. So now that we've walked through that list, there's a few themes that I think jumped out. First is, of course, that AI isn't an add-on anymore. People want to understand how AI changes the architecture of identity itself. Authentication, delegation, governance, trust boundaries. I mean, everything is shifting and AI is adding weight to that shift. The second thing is that governance is the real bottleneck. It's not technology, it's governance. Standards, agreements, decision-making structures, that's where the friction really is. Third, the clear definitions matter more than ever, whether you're talking about a wallet or a credential or even identity. Imprecise language is leading to imprecise systems, which in turn impacts the interoperability of those systems. Okay, you know, next thing is that identity is expanding to new kinds of actors, which we kind of knew. And you can definitely argue that, well, yes, but these actors have been around for a while, the non-human identities, the workloads, the agents. The problem is we haven't really been designing for them as a first-class citizen, but now they're like right there up front at the top of the list along with human identity. So we're designing for a much wider cast of characters now. And last but not least, I mean, interoperability keeps showing up as the kind of quiet theme beneath everything. People do want bridges more than they want silos. And with that, thank you for listening, reading, sharing, arguing with me, and sending me down new rabbit holes of things to research and write about. It has been absolutely wonderful to see how many of you care about the deeper questions shaping digital identity, not just the headlines, but sort of the structural shifts in governance, standards, and trust models. So if you want to follow these conversations in a more candid Chatham House rule-friendly space, that's exactly what I'm helping build at the Identity Salon. And it's where many of these topics get kind of pressure tested with senior architects before I start writing about them here. So the trends that I talked about, you know, they're absolutely going to continue in 2026, I think. And I think that makes 2026 a very interesting year. So thank you for being here, and I will see you next year. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.